Welcome back to the Unbox Broadcast. Today, Dr. Davis and I have a conversation with Dr. David Kennedy, Regional Executive Director of Mission for Advent Health in Kansas City. Join us as we spend some time learning about his leadership journey. We're ready to dive in. We're excited you're here. So stick around as we help you unbox the power and potential of your leadership.
I'm Dr. Robert Davis, family life educator and leadership coach. This is my co-host, R.P. Soriano. Soriano attended Johns Hopkins Carey Business School, worked in the financial industry, and was an international consultant before partnering with me to launch Unbox to Lead. Me? Well, I worked for over 20 years as a senior pastor and a community organizer. Then I retired and started a leaders peer support community called Unbox to Lead. Soriano and I have been friends since the early 90s, and with our varied experiences and expertise, we help leaders reach the next level in their leadership. So join us for the next few moments as we unbox the power and the potential of your relationships, your leadership, and your life.
Welcome back, one and all, wherever in the world you may be. I'm R.P. Soriano, and with me, once again, is Dr. Robert Davis. He's a leadership enrichment and family life and relationship expert. He's the founder of Unbox to Lead, author of Seasoned with Grace, God's Recipe for Healthy Family Communication, and the 12 Steps to Becoming an Unbox Leader. How are you this week, my friend?
Man, I'm actually feeling very well. Thank you very much.
All right. I want to remind everyone to please like, share, and subscribe to this broadcast. Also, be sure to follow all of our social pages as well as our blog page at www.unboxtolead.com. There you can access past episodes of our broadcast, webinars, and you can also sign up for our newsletter so you never miss out on the latest content or specials that we offer. So before we dive into our show, I want to just say one quick thing about the introduction that jumped out at me. Robert, you say in the introduction there, so join us for the next few minutes. My friend, we have never done a show that has lasted for just a few minutes. So maybe we need to adjust that to prepare the people for what they're actually in for.
Few is relative. I mean, you know, if you think about it, the Godfather movie was 4 hours. So compared to that, we're just on for a few minutes.
Yeah, I don't think any Oscars are heading our way either. At any rate, so let's get right into it. I know you, Robert and Dave, have known each other for quite some time. So you were both pastors in the greater Denver area. And I know that you also collaborated on some social justice, racial tolerance projects together. And I remember, Robert, how highly you spoke of Dave when you were transitioning from your role as a pastor. And you were talking about how when he was transitioning out as a pastor to take the position that he now holds now with Advent Health. And you were talking about how healthy the church was, how healthy the process was, how sane it was in the process of him transitioning out and looking for another pastor to lead the church. And I don't want to steal too much of the thunder, but I just wanted to kind of throw that intro out there, and I'll let you go ahead and start the interview tell us a little bit more about Dave and why he's here.
Yeah, Dave Kennedy exemplifies everything, in my opinion, that leadership is. As you said, he led one of the healthiest churches that I've ever seen in my life. The transition process was phenomenal. And the way that he exited from the church and prepared the church for the next phase of ministry and leadership was tremendous. Now, of course, academically, he has his doctor of ministry with a focus in leadership. So not only does he live it, but he also conceptualizes it from an academic perspective. And I have learned so much from observing and being his friend. I'm just so glad that he's here with us today. Dr. Kennedy, welcome, welcome, welcome. We're just so glad to have you.
Thank you, Robert. Thank you, Raphael. Happy to be here. All right. Thank you for that nice introduction.
Well, as Yogi Berra said, it ain't bragging if you've done it. So,
Robert, the way I remember it, there's a lot of mutual learning going on between the two of us. And I think the reason you liked the way I left the church is because I basically turned it over to you to be the preaching pastor in the interim. So that's why it remained healthy.
Well, thank you. I really do appreciate that. Although I sometimes wonder, because as soon as I retired and transitioned from congregational leadership, I began attending. I became Dave's member. So he was Pastor Dave to me. And within a few months of having to tolerate me on a week-to-week basis, he was like, this is for the birds. And next thing I looked up, he was catching the first thing smoking out of there. So I don't know if that's a plus, if that's a plus or a negative. And he and I can go back and forth like this all day. So I'm gonna go ahead and jump right into it. We want to have a conversation with you today, Dave, about leadership and about your leadership journey. And so I'm just going to open it right up. We know that a leader is not born in a vacuum. Leaders are born from a family, from various, family constellations. So I believe that I have met your parents before. I know I've met your wife's parents, but I want to say that I've met your parents as well. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't remember what is your sibling position. Tell me a little bit about your family, a little bit about your background and all those things. Tell me about the you that makes you you from a family perspective.
Well, I think some of the formative events of my family of origin, my parents divorced when I was three, which of course is a very formative experience. So I didn't have a close relationship with my father growing up. He wasn't really in the picture very much. I certainly knew him, but we didn't have a lot of connection. I had an older sister, 4 years older. My mother remarried a man and had another sister or a daughter for her, a sister for me, who's 8 years younger. So I'm kind of a middle child, but really there was 8 years afterwards. So kind of like a baby as well. So I resonate with the middle child syndrome, though. The look at me, here I am, trying to get attention. So, yeah, there was a lot of moving in my childhood, a lot of moving from place to place. I don't recall exactly how many schools I attended by the time I graduated, but that was very formative to me as well. Made me very adaptive, but also I craved the kind of relationships and the roots other people had. I was always the outsider, always the new kid. And so that still impacts me and my leadership to this day. Always seeking to facilitate a sense of belonging and team, and inclusion.
Mm. Wow, that is remarkable. I want to stay just for a moment with your parents divorcing, because you and your wife have a very strong relationship. You're very involved in the life of your two sons. I'm just interested if you've ever thought about how the divorce of your parents influence the way that you view it, that you view marriage, and how you have tried to conduct yourself, or rather, manage your marital relationship.
Yeah, good question. I've often said, and it's been observed by many people, that when we grow up, as we start our own families, we either adopt the things that we loved about our parents and our family of origin, or we rebel and say those are the things that we're not going to do. And it's often good to rebel against the broken parts of our families of origin. And I have to give a lot of credit to Christ, because I became a follower of Christ about a year into my marriage. And, he kind of transformed my life, my marriage, and gave me role models in the church of men who were good husbands and good fathers that I was able to learn from and model after. That was probably the most formative decision of my life, certainly becoming not only a follower of Christ, but a member of the church, because that gave me the ability to, I think, overcome some obstacles from my family of origin.
Wow. So let me ask you this then, as I kind of touched on the divorce thing, just as a leader, what would you say was what is that you bring from your family that you believe had the most influence, or has the most influence on you as a leader? Because, and we're going to talk about your leadership journey, because you've transitioned from a congregational leader to more of a corporate leader. And so what do you think were some of the experiences or some of the lessons or whatever it may be from your family of origin that that helped to shape you as a leader? Because you're one of the people that when you walk in a room, you're typically identified as the leader. And so what do you think from your family helped to shape that about you?
Yeah. You know, I've already mentioned the fact that, you know, connection is very important to me and creating a sense of inclusion. And so just, you know, recognizing the people, other people in the room. But my mother was probably my biggest cheerleader to a fault. You know, I would get in trouble and she would, you know, defend me. She was always very, she would just cheer for me and gave me a sense of confidence that, you know, I could do anything I put my mind to, kind of thing. And so, yeah, I still thank her for that, you know, for, you know, while we had some challenges growing up and there was a lot of movement and instability at times, I never doubted that she was in my corner and cheering for me and supporting me. And I think that still is something I carry with me.
Well, I resonate with that so much. My last question, and I know Raphael has some questions as well. As you look at your current family or your family of destination, as some call it, what have you learned from your current family, your two sons, your wife, that you think has helped to shape your leadership and has helped you in this transition? Again, as I said, from one whole kind of industry to a whole nother industry. I hate to refer to it as the church as an industry, but I think you get the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am so blessed. You know, it'll be 32 years that Kim and I have been married in July. And I am in many ways the person that I am because of her. She has a wisdom and the ability to speak truth in a way that I'm able to hear. And so I have learned through her that I can't do this on my own, but it's a team effort, not just between the two of us, but it also teaches me to lean into and listen to others. And the same is true for my two boys. They have very different perspectives than me, but I still learn from them appropriate lessons that I'm able to apply, whether it's the language of a 20-year-old or just their different personalities and how to relate to them and how they grow differently from me. These are all things that have continued to shape me. And I just deeply appreciate my family for the person they've made me.
Have you been able to translate some of those lessons and some of those skills that you've developed in your family, both the family of origin and your current family? Have you been able to translate that into team building, into leadership, vision casting, things of that nature?
Well, yeah, because, for instance, Kim will see things that I don't see.
Okay.
I'll see part of the picture and she'll see the other part and she'll share it with me and I'll listen to that and I'll incorporate it into my vision and my vision becomes better for the organization because of what she sees, because we see such different things. And so, yeah, if you have the ability to listen and learn from the people around you, you're going to have a much better idea of where you're going and how to get there.
Well, you know, family is my bread and butter. So I could sit here all day, but I want to be respectful of our viewers and respectful of your time. So I'm going to turn it over to Raphael. I think he has some leadership, executive leadership questions he wants to dive into.
Yeah, I guess sort of, maybe. We'll see how that happens. let's not overpromise here. Dave, it's great to have you. It's great to have you with us. And I just want to ask you just quickly a couple questions. The first one is, who are some of the most influential people in shaping you as a leader and why?
Yeah, I think of the influences in my life in leadership have been many. And some of them have been people, leaders I've known, and other times it's someone that I've read or someone I've seen on a stage and didn't necessarily know, but you read their book or you watch them model leadership from afar and you could learn things. I think of the leaders that I've known and respected along the way. And, you know, I think of one man early in my leadership who just said, you know, you need to show more gratitude. You don't say thank you enough. Mm. And that just stuck with me. And I just became like a thanking machine after that. You know, just affirming people, you know, for real things, but just paying more attention to not only what they were doing, but also making sure that I was following up with a note, a card, a thank you, a text, whatever it may be. I think of some of the more highly relational leaders I've been blessed enough to spend time with and just watching them and learning about how, you know, I'm much more of a thinker and you know, not always so you know, warm and fuzzy, but watching people who are more warm and relational and being able to learn from them. I think of my current boss right now, who I have incredible respect for, but he is someone that I seek to emulate in so many ways, from his positivity to his wisdom in knowing what to say and when to say it, to being able to say no in a way that's clear but kind. So yeah, many, many leadership influences that I've had, both that I've known, but also that I've not known, but been able to observe.
You brought up something that that jumped out at me, and it's a little, taking a little side track here, but mm-hmm. you said that you weren't necessarily a warm and fuzzy person. You were kind of more of a thinker, I would assume a little more introverted or more cerebral. But listening to you and engaging with you, I can see some of that warmth. How would you encourage someone who is kind of in that same space, it struggles with that, or doesn't really know how to do that, and feels that by being warm and fuzzy, they're not being authentic or they're not being their real selves? How have you worked with that?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I agree with like the Marcus Buckinghams who say, you know, play to your strengths, don't worry about your weaknesses. And I understand that. And I understand that I want to surround myself with leaders and team members who can kind of complement my weaknesses. But at the same time, my number one life value, maybe number two, is growth. I want to grow. And so I want to know what my weaknesses are, and I want to get better at them. And so I'm constantly asking for feedback. I like to surround myself with people who will tell me the truth about myself and hold the mirror up, even when it's hard. And so when I hear, yeah, I mean, people don't know your heart, or, you know, if people could only see what you're really like, they would understand you better. And I hear feedback like that. You're like, well, I don't want to have to have people figure that out. I want them to see. And so you start realizing, you know, I need to grow in this regard. And then you find mentors who can help you do that. And you continue to ask for feedback. Am I getting better? You know, how did that come across to you? Or I can sometimes come across as, you know, aloof or intimidating, or so let me know if I do. You know, you just kind of try to make sure that you're growing and letting people know, hey, this is a weakness. I don't want it to impact the way we work together. Let me know if you see some way I can improve. So that's what I would encourage folks, is just maintain the growth mindset, surround yourself with people who could help you turn your weaknesses into strengths.
Mm. Yeah, you know, Rafael, you talked about introvert, you talked about, you know, personality factors, introvert, extrovert, et cetera. And I'm just going to share my observation. And Dave, give me your thoughts, especially if I'm inaccurate. One of the things that I've observed about Dave is that he does well with one-to-one relationships. Don't get me wrong. He is an organizational leader, both as a pastor and in his current capacity. But I've observed that he really does well in the one-to-one relationships. And so I think extrovert manifests itself in different ways. And so that's the way that I see. And I, when you said introvert, it made me kind of think, maybe I'm wrong here. But the way that I saw his extrovert part manifesting itself was more in the one-to-one relationships. And he and I met very quickly, and then I want to hear your feedback. He and I met where we were both asked to be a part of a focus group for a Christian school here in the Denver area. And he just came up to me and introduced himself and said, hey, listen, let's get together and do a breakfast or coffee or something. And, you know, people always say that. So I kind of brushed it off until he actually, I can't remember if he texted or called me and said, how does this date work for you? And it blew me away. I was like, wow, he's serious. And that actually started a multi-year friendship of he and I going out for breakfast. I think it was once a month. We made it on our schedule that we would always meet for breakfast and to spend time together, which ended up with us, you know, having fellowship meals together, spending 4th of July together, whole 9 yards. And I've gone way too far over time, but I want to hear your thoughts about what I just said.
Well, you left out an important detail there, Dr. Davis. I invited him out to lunch. I said I was going to buy him lunch, and he brought his kids with him, which I thought was quite interesting.
That tracks. That tracks.
He said, I heard you were buying, so I brought my kids.
Yep. We call those self-correcting behaviors. You'll never do that again.
No, but back to the growth mindset. I was at a stage where I was wanting to grow in a particular area, and that was in race relationships, understanding systemic racism. And when you and I met, you had made a couple comments that let me see that you kind of knew what was going on there. And I saw a potential mentor in you. And so I had approached a couple other people before you and taken some folks out to lunch. And, you know, it was just, it was going nowhere. Either people were saying, you know what, it doesn't exist. You know, these were Black leaders who were saying, you know what, I haven't experienced it, or weren't comfortable talking about it. But Robert, in the first 5 minutes of us sitting down to lunch, you were like schooling me. I didn't even ask a question, but you're like telling me about what was going on in the community. And I'm like, oh, here's someone I can learn from. This guy is a straight shooter. And so, yeah, over our many years of meeting together, you became like a mentor to me in so many ways. And as Raphael mentioned in the introduction, we were able to do some really meaningful things together with our churches and having joint worship services, race summits, and talking about these things, diversity and systemic racism. And so that's the way I remember it.
Okay.
Okay. You just gave me at least 2 hours of material. And it is taking everything. I mean, it's taking everything for me not to just go on a complete run with this whole thing. I mean, there is so much rich material, but maybe another time. It will definitely be filed in my memory bank, and I will bring it out at some point in time. Dave, can you discuss a personal life obstacle that you've overcome and how that made you a better leader? Are you comfortable talking about that?
A personal life obstacle. And how it made me a better leader. So that's going to give it some context. You know, some of the life obstacles I think about more than anything are interpersonal conflicts with friends or coworkers, where you just go sideways. You're trying to figure out how to write those relationships. There's so much to learn there. I think of this was a work experience, but it was much more personal than work. And I had someone reporting to me who was a dear friend, perhaps one of the best friends I had. And he was a direct report. And, you know, some people would say never do that. But here we were. He was working for me probably longer than he was a good friend. So we became friends as he worked for me. But he went through a series of very serious life obstacles, lost a child, had serious medical diagnoses. It impacted his ability to work. I found myself in a position of friend and boss and having to comfort him and hold him accountable. And it just became very difficult as he became very angry with some things. And we ended up getting to the place where we just couldn't work together anymore. And as a matter of fact, I had to say, we can't even see each other anymore. The relationship was so broken. I need space. Mm-hmm. And we ended up taking about a 3-year hiatus from one another. Then through a series of repentance and conversation, we ended up coming back together and we're solid again. I mean, we're very good friends once again. But that was a very difficult life obstacle. What are the lessons that I learned? I learned sometimes I let things go too long, that I probably should have cut things off a lot earlier before they got so toxic, you know, and made the hard decision of either, you know, terminating or asking someone to move on. I've learned that I think all relationships can heal if you're serious about it and give it enough time. And if you have two people who are very serious about working through that process. And I learned sometimes you need to take a break, you know? I don't know, you know, I think these apply to leadership, but I don't know. Those are some of the lessons that come to mind.
No, I think they very much do. We'll take a little break here. I'm RP Soriano with Dr. Robert Davis, along with our very special guest, Dr. Dave Kennedy. And you're watching Unbox. Let's move on to another question here. Can you talk a little bit about your leadership philosophy and your values? You hinted at it earlier But can you take a little bit of a deeper dive into that?
Well, Raphael, I love how you said leadership philosophy and your values, because they're completely connected. It's interesting, if someone had asked me my leadership style even 2 years ago, or my philosophy, I would have probably struggled and kind of gone all over the place. But for the last year or so, I've had the privilege of working with an executive coach who has really helped me connect the fact that I'm a value-based leader. I know what my values are, and that's how I lead. Hmm. And so my number one value is connection. And I've talked about that already. Being in good relationship with people is very important to me. Being connected to people, helping other people connect is very important to me. And so I lead that way. I lead relationally. I want to know everything's good with people on my team. If there is an issue, I'm going to address it. You know, I'm going to squash the beef as quick as I can. The second value would be growth, right? Mm. I expect to grow. I want truth from you. And I would expect that you would want to grow too. And that sometimes gets me into trouble because one, not everybody wants to grow.
Right.
And two, when you value connection and growth at the same time, that means you're going to have hard conversations.
Right.
Right. Maybe you're underperforming. Maybe you're not living up to expectations in your role. And so because connection and growth are important to me, we're going to talk about it. And I need to describe the gap between, you know, my expectation and where your performance is. And hopefully our relationship can handle that and you're wanting to grow. But if not, that can lead to some challenges. My other values are intentionality or results. You know, I just want to, everything we do is going to have a purpose. And so my leadership, I think, carries that, which leads to the kind of mission focus. You know, why are we here? Why are we doing what we're doing? Let's make sure everything, every action we take is going somewhere. My next two of my six values are efficiency and fun. They conflict a lot, right? So you can't have fun necessarily in an efficient way, but I want us to be efficient, which means communication. I want efficient, concise communication, but also we need to stop and have fun once in a while. And I like my office and our teams to be filled with laughter. I know we're doing well when we're laughing together. We could stand a lot when we're laughing together. We can go through a lot. And then my final value is just honesty or authenticity. I want to be true to me. I want you to be true to you. Let's not play games. Let's not wear masks. If you're having a bad day, tell me, bring all of you to work. Let's just help each other out. Our corporate promise to our community is feel whole. Mm-hmm. We want everyone in our community to have the opportunity to feel whole, body, mind, and spirit. And so that means in our company, we ask people to bring their whole selves. And so be authentic. So I don't know if you want to unpack any of those, but those are my six core values. And I kind of try to lead from those.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I find it very interesting, your statement before you dove into that about leadership style and values. Are you seeing more of that? You mentioned your executive coaching. Are you seeing more of where leadership is moving more to that value-based leadership, as opposed to trying to find a specific style, but leading from your values? And if you're seeing that trend, is that something that you think is good for leadership or better for leaders?
Yeah, I certainly think that in the corporate world and in the church world as well, there's an acceptance that, and maybe this is new, but that there's many different styles of leadership, right? There's not one size or a cookie cutter approach. You know, we need to lead within our own skin. But I don't know about the values based. I would hope that that's a growing awareness for leaders. I just know that for me, every time I would talk about something with my coach, he would connect it back to one of the values that we had already established are important to me. And it made me start seeing kind of everything that I was doing in leadership as connected to one of my values. And it's just become very familiar to me. I think it's great if people know what is important to them and lead from out of that, because that's the way you're going to be authentic as a leader.
Yeah, I agree with that. When I think about, so my kids, they are considered third culture kids because they're being mm-hmm. raised in Singapore, and we struggle. One of the things we struggle with, and I've talked about it here on the broadcast in the past, is the fact that they don't really have ties to what it means to be American per se, because they're just not growing up in their passport of origin, country, or that's however they refer to that. And we struggle with that. What does it mean to be American? And what we've worked on, or what we've focused on, is let's just focus on values. Just focus on who you are as a person, what your values are, and let's just make sure that those are solid. And we'll let that, the whole cultural identity thing, work its way out. But if you're solid with your values, you know what you will stand for, what you will not stand for. I feel like that will get them more through life and wherever they go, in a way where they're not just necessarily caught up in trying to be connected with, with a nationality per se. So since we've kind of taken that away from them, Robert, you want
to? Yeah, I wanted to just a couple of things that just jumped in my mind when we talk about values and guiding principles. One of the things, and even with your situation with your children, I think that guiding principles and values transcend culture, nationality, et cetera. Let's talk about That's a guiding right. principle, of integrity. That goes everywhere. Mm-hmm. Or whether, and I heard Dave talked about one of his values is intentionality. That goes everywhere. No matter where you are, whether you're in Japan or in Africa, whether you're in a remote place in the Amazon jungles, intentionality is going to show up there. So I'm always encouraged with a leader who says, "Hey, this I want to make sure that I'm showing up through my values, making sure that I'm showing up, living out the principles of my life, etc." Because I know that can be applied wherever. And it can be translated, I guess it's applied and translated into any cultural context that we may be in. I wanted to ask Dave this question because I want to go back a little to his pastoral leadership. We at Unbox do a lot of work with nonprofit leaders who have to do a lot of work with volunteers. And one of the challenges with volunteers is you really don't have a carrot or a stick. They do it because they want to do it. In your pastoral leadership, there were times that you had individuals who did not necessarily see where you were going or buy into where you were attempting to lead the church. How did you manage the pushback? How did you manage even the sabotage by individuals who were volunteers? You're not paying them, so you can't just fire them. That were not necessarily on page with where you were going.
Well, great question, and I'll just kind of disagree with the one thing you said: is you can't fire them. You can fire volunteers. We did fire volunteers. It's not a fun process, but sometimes you just have to redirect them or put them in a place where they can succeed.
Oh, pause it for a second. Talk about that a little bit more. Then talk about firing volunteers a little bit more. I think that's something that a lot of leaders will want to hear more about.
Well, I think of one volunteer in particular who they were working directly with me, and it was not working. It was not a healthy situation. And so I just had to say, I really appreciate your heart here. And I understand that you want to help, but this is not your role. And I'm going to have to ask you to move to another role. I can help you find that, but it's not this role. And it was hurt that this person was hurt. And, but in the long run, it was a much better situation for everyone. We were able to work through it, but yeah, it happens. And so I think I said it just to say, we can't have the mindset that we can't fire volunteers. We need to know that volunteers can be reassigned. They could be removed from their positions if it's being toxic to the organization or to a leader's health. But to your point, I had the advantage of starting the church you were part of, Robert, New Day Parker, out of a multi-site model. So we had several locations for this church all one church, but different locations. And over the course of time, they kind of developed their own culture, and different people with different values went to the different locations, right? One was maybe a bit more traditional. One was a bit more progressive, suburban. And so by the time we had multiplied those two sites and I ended up going with New Day Parker, they had a very, very strong culture with a lot of buy-in, everyone wanting to go the same direction. And so we had the kind of culture that was so clear on its values and its mission that if someone came along to sabotage that, the system expelled them, right? They were so uncomfortable in that environment that they ended up self-selecting and finding another organization that was more in alignment with their values. And so we had some very clear gatekeepers for the organization from an orientation everyone had to go through in order to become a part of the organization, where we would say, these are our, these are our values. This is what's important to us. This is who we are. And if you align with this, we would love to have you join us. If not, we could help you find another church. But that was very helpful too. You know, just trying to, you know, weed anything out before, because there's different ways of looking at how to do church and, you know, what's important. And there's, I think, a church for everybody. And so it's just about finding the people who are going to align with your values and your mission and just staying on that path and not accommodating people who have other views, you know, hearing them, making room where you can within your values and your mission, but knowing where the line is and saying, I'm sorry, we can't go there. That's not who we are. You're welcome to stay here, but you just need to know we're not going there.
Robert, do you have any follow-up?
No, I was going to let you jump back in.
I don't have anything to jump back in.
I left Robert speechless. I left.
You left. Yeah, I know. I know. You might have.
So yes, and I do. Well, then I thought that you had some follow-up. I thought you were transitioning to your next phase. Let me jump in, and that is, you're in two total different worlds. I know that there's an element of spiritual care in your current position, but the construct is corporate. It's a hospital. Mm-hmm. It's it has a total different function than a church. How have you transferred, and I share this because leaders make transitions from corporate to nonprofit, nonprofit to corporate. They make transitions from one aspect of nonprofit to another, one aspect of corporate to another, et cetera. How did you transition those skills that you acquired from pastoring into the corporate world?
Yeah. There's a lot of doubt that can go into that because I'd never worked in this environment before. But so number one, I had to trust the person who recruited me and hired me. He is someone that I do have a great deal of trust for, and he believed I could do it. And other people who had been in healthcare who knew me believed I can do it. And so that meant a lot to me. But a lot of the things that I was doing as a leader in a church completely prepared me for this, because I'm still doing the same things. I'm caring for people spiritually. I'm overseeing teams of individuals to accomplish predetermined goals. We're having to develop systems. We're having to engage our community. We're having to engage global mission footprints. I get to develop leaders. These are all things I was doing. And so the transition from one to the other was pretty seamless. And so I'm fortunate in that regard. Not all leaders are able to make that smooth of a transition from one industry to the next. But
What I'm hearing you say is that organizational leadership, and this is something that we do talk about at Unbox to Lead, is that there are so many similarities, and the challenges, especially relating to interpersonal relationship skills and development and whatnot, there's so many similarities between an organizational leader, whether it's a pastor, whether it's nonprofit, whether it is corporate, whether it's a family business, et cetera. You know, those skill sets are similar and transferable. And yes. So it seems as if you are affirming this. I have one last question, Raphael, if I can throw that in there.
Yeah.
You know that we're working with the clock. And that is, what advice or counsel would you give someone who is entering organizational leadership, and can we break it down into two? What would you give to a new person? You know, there is a dearth of people entering into the pastoral field. And this is across denominations. So what would you tell a young person that is entering into congregational leadership? What would you tell someone that is entering, a young person that's entering into organization, other forms of organizational leadership?
Wow. Well, anyone who is entering into pastoral leadership, as you say, there is a dearth. And so I would encourage that if you feel called to go that route. I believe the church is the hope of the world. I believe that a life committed to growing the church is a life well spent. And I would just say, yeah, grow with your church, have a growth mindset, be a learner, be humble, listen to the people around you, know that the people in your church are going to be there longer than you are, and just do what you can to love them and grow them toward mission fulfillment. That's the purpose. The purpose isn't to comfort them. Certainly that is a part of the mission, but it's not to just do what they want to do, but it's to, you know, Jesus has given you the mission, make disciples. So help your church become disciples of Jesus and make disciples of others. For organizational leadership, you know, the same things is relationships are key. Learning is key. Half of your job, maybe more, is going to be about your ability to relate to others. Be more focused on being interested than interesting, right? Learn more than you're worried about impressing people. And then there's the technical aspect of any job and the knowledge and learn as much as you can, become an expert in what you do so that you can add the most value to your organization so that, you know, really they can't do without you.
You know, I told you that was going to be the last one. I promise this is going to be the last one. And this is to make up for bringing my kids to our first lunch meeting. Okay, so this is the makeup. And that is, you are actually the first white male that we have had on Unboxed. And we are in a very unique time in corporate leadership. We are still dealing with the Me Too movement. And I'm not casting any judgment either way on it. I'm just talking about the reality of it. We're in the Me Too movement. We are in the Black Lives Matter movement. We are more sensitive to immigration, diversity, inclusion, and equity. I'm interested in how, as a white male, do you approach it? How do you think about it? How have you navigated this new terrain? And I forgot to mention, you know, our understanding and sensitivities toward LGBTQ+. So how have you navigated that? I think that's very important for us to ask.
Yeah. Thanks, Robert, for the opportunity to talk about that. These are issues that are really, really important to me. I actually started our region's first DEI council and have been chairing it for the last 3 years. Because this is important to me, for a large reason, because of things that you've taught me, things I've learned with you. Robert, I don't know if you remember, one of the first things Robert did was he introduced me to an all-Black ministerial alliance in downtown Denver, where I attended for 2 years as the only white guy and only white pastor. And just being in that place where I was the minority, and just hearing a very different way of looking at the world and looking at ministry, and just these godly men who had such different experiences than mine, was just so formative for me. And so this is, yeah, it's become an important part. So obviously I can't change who I am. I'm not going to apologize for who I am, but I can recognize where there is disparity, where there's inequity, and invite those people to the table and advocate for them and say, we need to make sure that everyone has equal opportunity, a sense of inclusion. And so, yeah, our DEI council is doing some really significant work in acknowledging our various team members from minority cultures, in addressing health disparities in our community, social determinants of health in our community. So that's some of the work I'm most proud of. So again, I can't change who I am. I'm not going to apologize for who I am, but I can use the influence I've been given and the responsibility I've been given to advocate for those who maybe don't feel like they have a seat at the table.
I have so many more questions, but I gave my word. And for the first time in all my life, I'm going to actually keep my word.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our broadcast today. Thank you so much to our special guest, Dr. Dave Kennedy. I have to say, I was very much enriched by your insights, your approach, your values. Thank you so much. I'm sure our listeners were also blessed just from hearing your perspective. So thank you for being with us today.
Thanks to both of you. It's been a pleasure.
The Unboxed broadcast is produced by Bobby Davis Jr., graphics and video design provided by Damon Mace, and marketing and promotion by John Sedano. Remember to visit our website at www.unboxthelead.com. For Dr. Robert Davis, I'm R.P. Soriano. We look forward to seeing you at the next broadcast of Unboxed as we help you unbox the power and potential of your leadership. Be well.
Unboxed provides a full-service leaders peer support community that helps high-level leaders become more authentic leaders who build healthy workplace cultures and reach their personal life goals. To learn more and discover how we can take your leadership and your life to the next level, please visit our website at unboxedtolead.com. That's unboxed, the number two, lead.com. Again, that's unboxed, the number two, to lead.com.